This week, we conclude our journey from Baja to Alaska with our visit to Seward, plus the top campgrounds in the nation. And this will be a rare double brood year for cicadas. Get ready, folks. This is RV Miles. Welcome to episode number 314 of RV Miles. I'm Jason.
And I'm Abby. And we are two RVers who, along with our boys, Jack, Ethan, and Henry, have been crisscrossing all over North America on one epic road trip since 2016. Here at RV Miles, we talk all things RV and outdoors, from industry news to destinations, national parks, and so much more.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being here. It's so good to have you all here again. We are continuing to move along with getting things ready in the studio. It is going slower and slower than we'd hoped. Part of that is travel stuff and business things. So I'm leaving town, actually. We're both leaving town tomorrow to go to Chicago. Mm-hmm. We get to go to my old theater that I used to run with our good friends Walter and Eugene, the Mercury Theater. They are producing Chicago's first production of Jersey Boys. So we get to go see that tomorrow night, and you guys are hearing this after we had already gone. But I'm also leaving then from Chicago to head to California to visit Pebble again. Pebble was that company that I went to that makes an EV trailer. So it's a trailer with a powered axle, and they have some new features going into this that they weren't able to demonstrate to me last time I was there. So they're bringing me out there again to sort of check out some of the new stuff. So I'm excited to share that with you.
I think you're selling yourself short, though, because if you are watching this, you will probably notice we're sitting in such fancy new chairs. Lazy Boy office chair is now a part
Costco
of
the Costco Lazy, the officially licensed Lazy Boy, not manufactured by Lazy Boy.
No.
I have had one of these chairs put together for like a week and a half now or something like that. And the second one has not been ready. So we've been still sitting on folding chairs, like my dad's like folding chairs, probably from the 80s, card table folding chairs. So now we can both sit in a nice desk chair.
Now we can move around and.
But it took me like an hour.
Office races.
It took me like an hour and a half to put one of them together.
Yeah, it's very nice to have these. And we're hoping, though, that in a couple of weeks or a couple of episodes, we might be able to share with you some fun news about an official grand opening date for this space, that you could come here and have an open house if you're going to be in the area and celebrate the completion of the Mile Zero studio, or at least completion enough that we can have people in here and make it look like it's done. I think anybody knows a space is never really done. Yeah. There's always going to be a little bit more that we want to do, but we're hoping to be able to invite you into the space this summer. And then, of course, just as a friendly reminder, we do have homecoming coming up in October, and we're just going to continue to let you know about that because tickets are getting ready to go on sale April 1st for Mile Marker members, April 15th for the general public. We are going to have the best time. Tickets are $200 for Mile Marker members, $225 for the general public, and kids are always free. Bring your children to come hang out with my children. It is not going to cost you anything extra. We will feed them in the evening still. It's just something that we build into to hopefully make this a little bit more affordable for families, because boy, have we been there where you're paying not only for yourself, but you're paying for your kids. And then that becomes really difficult to attend events like this. So hopefully we can get everyone across the board in the community at this event, October 9th through the 13th. Best way to stay informed is just to head over to rvmiles.com/mailing list, get on the mailing list, and we will send all of this information out so you can get your tickets. They're really limited. We only have at tops 80 campsite spaces for this event. So we really, really hope that you will join us.
We talked last week about some of the top glamping destinations in the nation. And this week, there's a new list of the top campgrounds across North America. Now, this is from the folks at Campspot. And Campspot is a reservation software. So this is actually campgrounds in the Camp Spot ecosystem. Mm-hmm. The top ones that they have picked out of their ecosystem. So the folks that actually use Camp Spot reservations. But Camp Spot is really one of the largest reservation systems out there. So there are quite a few. But what I thought was really interesting about this list, though, is that we've actually been to three of these sites. So these are not campgrounds that that were voted on. What this is they took their reservation data, like how popular these parks are in terms of reservations, reviews, when folks leave user reviews after they visited them, and the list of sort of amenities and stuff that exists at some of these. Let's just be honest. They're all RV resorts. Campground is a loose term here, but there's no particular order here. And there's 10 of them, but the first one on the list here is Verde Ranch RV Resort.
Oh, yay. Oh, I think anyone knows, especially if you were with us in 2019 and 2020, that Verde Ranch holds a very special place in our heart. It was actually where we sheltered in place at the beginning of the pandemic. They were absolutely incredible. It is where we met our dear friends, the Armsteads, who we still call dear friends all these years later, that we traveled with, safely traveled with, and created our own little ecosystem while the pandemic was raging through and things were so uncertain in 2020. We hosted our very first kind of RV Miles meetup.
Yeah.
At Verde Ranch to kind of test the waters to see if people actually wanted to hang out with us. And amazingly, people did. And we had that whole event at Verde Ranch. It was fantastic. Yeah,
obviously, it was great enough that we went back there to do that after being stuck there for many weeks in the early days of the pandemic. So
we love Verde Ranch. It's great to see it on this list.
CRR Resorts, they have several other resorts across the country now, and they do a really great job with them. We haven't been to any of them, but folks have shared photos and stuff and have really enjoyed their stays at these places. Next on the list is the Greenbrier Campground in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. This was the place we visited, I think, on our, I don't know, second or third visit to the Great Smoky Mountains. We obviously love it in that area. But Greenbrier is pretty cool because it's sort of on the far east end of Gatlinburg. It's a little bit out of town, and there's the Greenbrier entrance to the park, which is sort of quiet. There's a lot of hustle and bustle in Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. And this is just sort of a nice RV resort that has the Little Pigeon River running right through it. So you can actually go, the kids can play in the river. They have a lot of riverfront campsites. They have a shuttle bus that takes you right into town. It's a really wonderful little spot for visiting the Great Smoky Mountains. There are so many campgrounds around there that sort of feel like, just be honest, they feel like RV resorts where people are packed in. In this place, you know, it's a big park and people are close together in their campsites, but they, I think, do a really good job of making it feel like a campground in the woods.
Yeah, some of the spots are really integrated into the environment there. There are a few that aren't. It is still a private campground, but I would say it's up there with some of our favorite places to stay when we're in the area for sure.
Ocean Grove RV Resort in St. Augustine. And then the fourth one is the other one we stayed at is the Santa Cruz Redwoods RV Resort. And I was a little surprised by this one, to be honest.
I was too, because I wasn't super crazy about this campground.
I didn't hate this place. First of all, you were gone through half of it.
Yeah.
It rained so hard while we were there, so hard that the power went out in the whole area. Internet was down in the whole area. It was kind of a tough time staying at this place, but I did love the Santa Cruz area.
The campground itself was really difficult to navigate. I think that some of the spots were just really hard for rigs of the size that they said could fit into those spots. You know, I think even ourselves being 25 feet was still the spot that we were in was definitely, I would not, you know, have wanted to push that too much more than 25 feet. And so I think there was just a little bit of that. Obviously, a lot of it has to do with navigating the natural environment there. I mean, it is stunning. Those trees are stunning.
You're in some real big trees. I mean, it's really cool to be within all of that.
Yeah. I would say, I guess what I would say is maybe it's best that this is not one of those campgrounds that you fudge the numbers on.
Yeah.
Be serious about how big you are. And if you can't get into the campground, then take that as a sign you shouldn't be there, because I think even a few feet off higher than what the spot says, you could find yourself in some serious trouble.
Yeah. So those are the ones we stayed at. There's also the Jackson Rancheria Casino and RV Resort in Jackson, California. Paradise by the Sea Beach RV Resort. Heard a lot of good things about that place in Oceanside, California. Brayley Family Campground in Ashford, Connecticut. Sun Outdoors Myrtle Beach. I don't love Myrtle Beach, but I would stay at a Sun Outdoors there for sure.
Yeah.
Sun Outdoors has some fantastic parks.
Yeah.
Canyon View RV Resort in Grand Junction, Colorado. Oh, we stayed there too. That's another one we've been to.
We did stay there.
Yeah.
Look at that. Okay. You know
what? What I'll say about that place is not incredibly special, but by far the best place you're going to stay in and around Grand Junction, Colorado.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and meticulously well taken care of.
Yeah.
Like raked gravel and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, it's Colorado. You're going to get these stunning Colorado skies.
Yeah, the sunsets.
Oh, man. Just all day.
And not a lot of people make it over that direction. We love the west side of Colorado.
Yeah.
The Front Range is very busy. Colorado Springs and Denver and all of the ski towns and Summit County and all that sort of stuff. It gets really, really busy. When you get to the Western Slope, the towns aren't as exciting. They're not as touristy for the most part, but there's so much more room to spread out. Yeah. There's still just as many wonderful places to see. And this place is a good spot if you're going through Grand Junction on your way to get to Utah. This is a great place to spend the night.
We are due for some more time in Colorado.
Yeah.
That is long overdue. I'm already thinking about it for next year. How much time can we be out west?
Yeah.
Long overdue. This is a great list. We will link to it in the description for the podcast episode and also in the YouTube version.
And I might as well say the 10th one on here because Stonebridge RV Resort in Maggie Valley, North Carolina.
Nice to see something like represented in North Carolina. We're doing a few nights in North Carolina this summer. We have some friends that live in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area. So we're going to stop. We're going to see them. That is one, this, and we're staying at a state park that's around there. They have some of the nicest state parks in North Carolina.
And there is a lot of diversity in the beauty of that state because you could get up into the
Asheville
Smoky Mountains, that side of the Smokies is, again, it's sort of the same thing like we were talking about with Colorado is the southern side of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in the Asheville area, the North Carolina side, is a whole lot quieter and you get a lot more peace and nature on that side. And it's every bit as gorgeous.
I would encourage anyone to don't fly through North Carolina. Take some time and go through there. Even the North Carolina side of the Great Smoky Mountains is probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
Of the park. It is absolutely worth it to take that drive or to find a way to stay on that side, to stay on the eastern side of the park and visit the North Carolina side. We love it. And it's a great way to still see the beauty of that park, but get away from some of the crowds
and
a little bit
too. You can drive some of the Blue Ridge Parkway, which is, if you don't know, the Blue Ridge Parkway is actually the most visited National Park Service site in the country by far, 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 far. And that's because it's a road.
A
lot of people take it and it's gorgeous. Yeah. But it is by far the most visited National Park Service site. So we'll link to that article in the show notes. Chances are you've seen them on the road. That's because Blue Ox designs and manufactures the best towing products in the industry. Just look around. You'll find them on highways and campgrounds and anywhere you find people traveling in the great outdoors. Award-winning tow bars, base plates, and brakes, a full line of weight distributing hitches, adjustable ball mounts, and a new line of fifth wheel hitches. With Blue Ox, towing doesn't have to be a drag. To learn more about how Blue Ox can make your travel adventures even more stress-free, visit blueox.com.
Outside.com.
Get ready to use your outside voice. Whether you're camping at a local state park, driving cross country to a music festival, or just want to try out the RV life before you buy, the adventure begins as soon as you step inside your RV share rental. Choose from thousands of options, including pet-friendly RVs and RVs that can be delivered right to your campsite. Each booking on RV Share also includes 24/7 roadside assistance for the ultimate peace of mind on the open road. With a wide-ranging inventory from affordable pop-up campers to luxury motorhomes, RV Share has a rental that is perfect for you. Book your RV now for the solar eclipse this April. There is still availability near the path of totality, and make sure to check out RV Share's Total Solar Eclipse RV Guide. Use promo code RVMILES30 for $30 off a $500 rental or more at RVShare.com. That's RVMILES30 for $30 off $500 at RVShare.com.
Let's talk about Seward, Alaska.
Yeah, let's move way different.
Seward was such a wonderful end to our trip. It wasn't exactly the end, okay? So we went from Baja all the way up to Alaska. The southernmost terminus of our trip was La Paz. But of course, our trip began before La Paz because we had to make our way down there. And just like that, our trip also didn't end in Seward. We had to make our way back into the U.S. And we spent some time in Anchorage, and we spent some time driving through Canada, and we spent some time in Edmonton, which we really liked. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of those spots on a future episode. But this is really where our trip culminated. This is where our friends Jenny and Grant met us there, which was, of course, a wonderful thing. So they flew out to meet us there and do some stuff with us. And this was sort of our last few days with the Schumacher family as well. We separated after leaving Seward before visiting Anchorage and making our way back. They spent a little more time in Alaska than us. They went on to Valdez, I think, but we needed to get back home for various reasons. So we just started to sort of book our way back home. But Seward is on an inlet. Okay. It's on the Resurrection Bay. And this is really where a lot of stuff that gets into Alaska makes its way in, right? So the Alaska Railway has its southern terminus here. So lots of goods that needed to get into Alaska might come here on a ship. It's a cruise ship terminal. So a lot of cruise ships end up here. So you have a lot of those sort of tour type things that happen in some of the other touristy towns.
And this was certainly happening while we were there. So for context, we were there at the beginning of August last year. So that was really prime tourism season for Seward. And we saw that at the campgrounds. We saw that in the adorable, quaint little town that we were within walking distance from our campground. And the constant cruise ships coming in and out. And that was what was so cool, is that you could go to bed, wake up the next morning, and come out and look out over the bay, and there's this giant cruise ship that at some point in the night has come in. And then it's really, I think, to me, Seward felt like the most touristy destination of everything we did, even more than Denali.
Yeah, and without feeling...
It wasn't cheesy. Pigeon Forge is super touristy and very, I mean, it's Pigeon Forge and Myrtle Beach and the Dells and all of that feel, you know, this is not that. This is still busy for them, is still remote feeling for some of us coming from more metropolitan areas, if that
and
makes
it is,
sense.
It is much, and it is not a town that is entirely centered around tourism, because it is the ice-free port that's longest served as the gateway to the interior of Alaska, and it's mile zero of the original Iditarod Trail, home to Kenai Fjords National Park. There's just a whole lot going on around here.
Yeah.
So what's cool, as Abby alluded to a little bit there about Seward, is that they have taken the whole. Most of this sort of bayfront area, there's like a bike path that follows the whole front of the bay. But the park behind the bike path there, throughout most of the town, is a city-run RV park. It's no frills. It's nothing special
It's in a
terms of
lot.
Like it being a parking lot. But what a wonderful location.
I would really love to encourage anyone that's listening to this. I try really hard after this episode comes out to put some photos or videos out across social media to kind of show some of these places. If you have never come over and looked at some of our travels, this would be the time to do it. I don't think we can accurately describe what it's like to kind of stay in this place and have the views that we had every morning. And the same for Homer as well. You pull up to these places and they're as popular as they are because this is a very, very popular RV spot. So if you come over to our Instagram or Facebook and or just check out the community posts on YouTube and take a look at what this place looks like. Seward is amazing. I loved it here. It had a lot of that old timey feel, the historical feel of Alaska that you're still looking for. And really, we just enjoyed the community there. And this is a vibrant time there. You know, this is one of those locations where they love having the tourists. Same as Talkeetna. I think sometimes it can be really exhausting. And as one who worked for years at a restaurant in downtown Chicago across the street from the Art Museum, and summer was just hugely busy in the restaurant. But there is always, I think, the risk in those big metropolitan areas like that where you kind of are a little resentful, a little bit like, oh, these, you know, this is not the case in Seward. It is not the case in Talkeetna. It's,
at least they're not open about it.
They're also phenomenal actors and they should all consider a career on the stage. But that is at least the vibe that they make sure to project and put out there so that you feel welcome in the community. And of course you're like, well, let me just spend some money. That is Seward. And our friends also, you know, we're going to talk a little bit, but there's some great Airbnb options as well for those of you who are considering this but don't want to do it as an RV. Our friends had a really cool Airbnb place right in the downtown area with a spectacular view out onto the bay. So there are a lot of ways that you can make Seward work if RVing up there after you have listened to this entire series just feels super, super overwhelming.
So the Seward Waterfront Park, it again, it overlooks the whole Resurrection Bay. You can just sit there the entire time there that you're there and enjoy that. But if you can get a site right along the bay, you'll definitely enjoy that. But these are close together sites in all sort of paved parking lot. These are not separated by, you know, their own little grass bits or anything like that. You do get a picnic table and there are fire rings that you can utilize that are sort of across the bike path. The bike path goes right up against your RVs as well. So they're going to have a lot of people watching happening, but you know, there's going to be people around you saying hi.
We ran into people that we had seen.
Oh, that was so great. Yes.
That was what was so cool is that you get down here and you get to all these like different places in Alaska. And we've talked about this so many times. You start seeing people that you saw at the start of your trip. And so when you're at a place like this, where it's a heavily trafficked area and everyone's walking, you're like, oh, hey, oh my gosh, it's so nice to see you again.
Strange. You're the largest state in the nation. But everybody's going to sort of some of the same places. So it would just, again, a great way to end sort of our experience here. The sites themselves are $40 a night for dry sites, no hookups. And that's what we stayed in. Most of the sites are dry sites. They do have water and electric sites that are $60 to $70 a night. So again, it's not the cheapest place to stay like anywhere else we've been in Alaska. It is weirdly straight back ends, which is really frustrating, especially in a parking lot style place where so that sites are not angled, right? It would make a whole lot more sense if they were angled. It's very difficult for some of the larger RVs or even some of the smaller ones like us to get into some of these sites. And we saw a lot of that happening. So, you know, keep that in mind. It does have a free dump station. And this was a really good place for us to get out the bikes and take the bikes into town. The greatest thing about this campground is that we rarely had to get into the truck to go anywhere. We walked pretty much everywhere in the sort of town area that we wanted to go to, save for a few of our tour type places that we'll get to in a minute. But we were able to walk to coffee shops and restaurants or hop on our bikes. We spent a lot of time on our electric e-bikes.
They were clutch in Seward. I was so happy to have them.
Let's talk about a couple eatery type places. First of all, the first one being the Resurrect Art Coffee Shop.
Yes.
And you found this place and I was like, oh, stop trying to drag me to coffee shop. And then you did. And I was
and you loved it.
Incredibly amazed by this place. One of the coolest coffee shops I've ever seen.
Fantastic. So it is in an old church that they have converted into a coffee shop. And you know that the minute you see it, you know that the minute you walk into it. It's stunning. It's historical. They have used it now to display and sell local art of all different kinds. So that is all different kinds of visual art. Then you had those that were selling jewelry and pottery and homemade journals, tea towels. I mean, anything that you can kind of think of that could be displayed and purchased. This was there. Stickers. Stickers.
Packed with the stuff. And it changed while we were there. The type of art that's on the walls and stuff changed in the short time we were there. So they do keep it like fresh. And
the food is great. Yeah. The coffee was good. It's very, very popular there. They had some good breakfast options. So just know they do have indoor and outdoor seating. If you go at prime morning time, you are going to wait in a pretty decent line. And, you know, you could struggle to find if you're wanting to sit somewhere, you're going to struggle to find somewhere to sit. But they even had old pews that they were using for booths. I mean, it was just a really, really cool gem of a coffee shop. We went there at least
three times. Yeah,
four times. Yeah.
The next place I want to talk about is a really cool cocktail lounge. It's called Flamingo Lounge, and it feels like you are stepping right back into like the 40s and 50s. And the cocktails are sort of elevated versions of the cocktails that, you know, existed in that time. And it's all sort of neon and pleather tufted vinyl couches. And
it's awesome.
It was really a cool throwback place that they've kept together really well. I mean, it's original, but they've kept it up, right?
They do have a kitchen. So they do serve food up until a certain hour, and then their cocktails are so good. They will have some seasonal ones, but then just, I think you got an old fashioned, which is pretty,
what I always get.
That's your go-to. And I think that Jen and I got the Barbie, which was their seasonal for that time of year. And it was kind of a martini.
It was the time of the Barbie movie.
It was. And I was more than happy and still am more than happy to drink my Barbie drink. It was so much fun. We went in the evening, kind of after all the kids had gone to bed. And we, all of us grown up, so Jamie and Clay were with us and Jen and Grant and the two of us. And we went and we had cocktails and we had such a nice time. This was sort of our close towards the end
trip. It was kind of like our close to our goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, this was very bittersweet time for us because so many things were happening. Baja to Alaska was wrapping up. Having Jen and Grant there was really special for us just on a personal family level. And then knowing with each passing hour and each, you know, passing day that we were going to be saying goodbye to the Schumachers and, you know, the feeling that came with that because we had all been together for so long.
Much longer than just Baja to Alaska. We spent a lot more time with them than that.
It was hard. It was very weird. And, you know, I think there was this attempt to, you know, it's hard to describe. I don't really have the words for it yet. It's the longest time I've ever spent with another family doing something so intense like that. And there's a real emotional bond that you have with them for the rest of your life. And, you know, to see even Ethan and Grace. And
that's the worst part is that the kids got so close that and having to then separate them.
Yeah.
It was really tough.
I will never forget our last night watching the two of them. I'm going to try not to get emotional, but just like watching the two of them just walk up and down the beach, just talking like as long as they could, you know, it was, and I'm really happy to say, cause I was so worried for the kids that maybe they would struggle to keep in touch afterwards. And I'm so thankful. Ethan and Grace continue to have such a strong friendship. Yeah. You know, Henry and JoJo, they continue to, they're still young. So I don't think they, you know, they're not texting and chatting as much as E and Grace are, but, and even for us with Jamie and Clay, you know, we still, life gets really, really busy, but we all still find a way to connect still. And it's just, I'm really glad that that bond, and we'll see them in May. We're excited to get to see them again after several months. We'll see them again and do a little camping with them. And, but that this was, Seward was really bittersweet on so many levels, because also we knew at this point, we had signed the lease for the apartment. We knew that our time as full-timers was coming to an end. And so we knew that when we left this campground and started making our way back to the Midwest, that our whole life was going to change. Yeah. And so there was a lot of emotions being processed by Jason and I during this time. And so a lot of like trying to recall this is a little fuzzy, because I think there was just so much going on in my head, like emotionally, as we were preparing to just upend everything.
So,
so now you're going to make me try to talk about this one thing.
So there, I will say that, so we did eat at a couple other places. They were fine. I don't think there was anything to write home about. So I didn't, you know,
really they list were all fine. The they were fine. So that
we went to, but we, this is a great place to do some tours. And particularly because there's a big national park right here, right? And it's a national park that's not one that you can easily hike and drive through. It's one that you want to see from the sea, or you can drive in to see a bit of a part of it that we'll talk about in a minute. But so the first tour that we took two tours. We all took one tour, and then Abby and Jenny and Grant took another. And the Schumachers did this one as well, but they did it separately from us. The first one is called the Iditarod.
It's such a great name.
It's CV's Iditarod. It like the Iditarod, but it's Iditarod. And it's a tour that culminates. They have several different types of tours that you can do, different lengths. They all culminate with a dog sled ride. So this is a family with generations of folks that have done the Iditarod and won it many times. And in fact, Dallas CV just won the Iditarod like a week ago. Like it just happened. Yeah. So this it's, we'll get to the dog side part of it in a minute, but the tour that we did was a 6-hour tour that they call the Real Alaska Tour. And it's a sort of tour bus type tour. So you drive to the place where they have the dogs and you get on a bus there. Or that bus picks folks up at the cruise ship terminal. So we're on this tour with some folks that were cruise ship type people as well. And it took us on a really wonderful tour of town, giving us a lot of the history of the town itself. We went on a hike to Exit Glacier at Kenai Fjords. So you go up to the National Park Visitor Center and you hike in maybe a mile and a half. It is kind of uphill and such, and you get to see Exit Glacier. And on the way up there, there's lots of signs. Actually, even driving in, there's lots of signs of where the glacier was and what year and
how far it's retreated.
But you can get up there and see it. It's not one that you can get up and walk on, but you can get pretty close to the glacier and sort of see it. This was a very buggy.
Oh like, my gosh.
The bugs were so bad.
In fact, they were so bad that Jack was like, hard pass. I'm going back to the visitor center. And he didn't even come up to the glacier. He was like, nope, and don't care.
In all fairness, he was getting bit up like crazy.
It was really bad. And what's amazing is I'm looking at the show notes for this. To kind of support what I was just talking about a second ago, I absolutely forgot we even did this. I just thought we went to see the dogs.
No, there is so much
And
more.
As you started talking about this, and I was like, what is he talking about? And then I was like, oh my gosh, we did all this stuff, and I have totally forgotten all about it.
That's a which lot. Is,
thank goodness you did the show notes for this episode. I forgot about Exit Glacier. I forgot that we had, which we're about to talk about. So after Exit Glacier, we went and had lunch in town.
They took us to a restaurant in town, and we had a decent lunch.
I forgot all about this.
A sort of sit down, all included, sort of restaurant experience. They took us by a stream where we could see salmon spawning. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the dog sled experience, and this whole thing was about $189 a person.
So yeah,
again, it's a tour, they're pricey, but it did include lunch and it was a long tour. I will say about this, before we get to the dog part, that this is something as an RVer, if you have a small vehicle with you, or you have a small RV, or, you know, you're not tied to a large motorhome or something, this is something that most of this you could do on your own without it being part of a tour. This is mostly ground-based stuff. Like, you can go to Exit Glacier, you can go to the restaurant, right? You can go see the salmon spawning. You're not going to get some of the history parts of it, but you could do all that sort of stuff. You know, this is sort of designed to pick the folks up at the cruise ship terminal, mm-hmm. and take them around.
But sometimes it's nice to not be responsible for those things.
It certainly is.
We had our friends with us, and, you know, you kind of just like, okay, we're doing this, and it's checking off all these boxes of things we want to do. Don't have to think about it. We've got someone who's going to give all the information and have it all planned out for us. And I think that was great after several weeks in the state where we were really just trying to hit all those major things. And to be able to have someone be like, this is a tour you want to go on, and we're going to hit all these places for you, and you're just going to sit back in this air-conditioned bus and enjoy the ride.
So the dog sled experience, though, was probably, it's up there with the top 10 things that we've did in this whole trip. They have done such a great job of creating an experience where you can go meet all the dogs. They give you a whole set of lessons on the dogs. You get to go up and pet them and take photos with them, and then you get to ride behind them. So you arrive here, and they take you down a trail into a back area where all the dogs are kept. And I think one of the first things we did, I think, was we got to visit the puppies.
This is something that
our kids will remember for the rest of their lives.
Yes, they will.
So the puppies, I wish should say, first of all, the Alaskan Huskies, I guess we talked about this a bit when we visited Denali. So we got to sort of visit dogs at Denali as well. They're not what you think of when you think of Huskies, because you've been trained by movies to think of Siberian Huskies. Alaskan Huskies are a bit different, but we get to visit these dogs. They're gorgeous. They really are beautiful
little white puppies.
And then the little puppies, you go into sort of a penned area where there's two penned areas where they have the puppies.
Mm-hmm.
We go, they talk to you a little bit about not letting the puppies out.
Be very careful about this.
So Abby, there was a puppy trying to get out, and you didn't want to crush it with the gate.
Yes.
So instead, what happened was you somehow let all of the puppies out of their pen.
I did. Like
8 or 10 of them.
Yeah,
and everybody there was like running, trying to round up the puppies and grab them. And I remember Grant having two of them under his arms. I mean, because they're large, they're not tiny.
They're big puppies.
They're large sized puppies.
I did. I let all of the puppies out, and that was totally embarrassing. But in my defense, again, we're all going into the pen, and I'm the last one, and I'm going to close the door, but there was a puppy there, and I was trying to get puppy. I didn't want to hurt the puppy, and I didn't think the puppies would bolt, and boy, the puppies were like, oh, sucker.
We know.
They took off, and I was sort of, you know, when something happens and you kind of like freeze and you're watching it all happen, and you're like, I don't know what to do, and I was just standing there, and I think someone was like, close the gate.
So she closes the gate.
But then all the puppies were out.
when she finally closed the gate, every single puppy was out of the pen. And we're like, well, maybe you don't need to close it now.
Well, now it's like, open the gate. The puppies need it. And so
it was totally fine. You got the impression that it happened often there.
It was a good laugh. Everyone had a good
time. So we got to play with the puppies. I mean, you can get down on the ground and lay on the ground with them. The puppies like love hanging out with you. Of course, that's a wonderful experience.
Right.
And especially for kids, they just had a really great time with it. And you go inside and they have sort of free coffee and stuff and restrooms and all that. And you go inside this little building where they give you a presentation where they bring a dog in and show you how the dog gets dressed up for being pulled behind a sled. And they have a volunteer come up and put like all the gear, the coats and the gloves on them and stuff. And they leave that stuff out so you can get dressed up in it and take photos. And we got to do all that kind of stuff. And you get to see all their trophies. It's a big trophy room.
Yeah, so they've got all like past Iditarod trophies and dogs of note. One of the dogs' name was Ditka, which we absolutely loved being Chicago Bears fans. But the gear itself, because Ethan and I put the gear on, the gear itself is very heavy.
Yeah.
It's very heavy and also quite warm. I mean, which it needs to be.
Sure.
They demonstrated they had one of the Alaskan Huskies come in. These dogs are just so sweet and they just exude joy. And they even did a demonstration of how they dress the dogs to keep them safe out on the trail as well. It was very informative. And then we got to load up and go for a ride. And that was awesome.
So the dogs in their teams, you know, and this is part of their training. It's not just a entertainment thing. This is part of a working training for these dogs. They get them all harnessed up and they attach them to basically a sled on wheels. A lot of them seem to be like converted large golf carts.
Yeah. we were in a golf cart with wheels.
So that, like four or five people, plus your musher, you're all in a cart. It was us and our kids. Actually more than
there,
that.
Yeah, there were seven of us.
So plus our musher. So that's eight. And you get pulled behind the dogs through the woods on a track that they have built, this trail that runs through the woods, and they show you how they stop and give them breaks and
so cool.
It is a really, really cool experience.
And they talk a little bit about how they pair dogs up and on like who, what dog is with what dog and kind of like the personalities of the dogs. And
they know intricately the personalities of these dogs.
Yeah. It's very, very fascinating. It's one of those ways that, again, it's super cool hands-on education that you don't even realize you're learning. And then here we are now, 6 months, 5 months removed from this whole thing. And we can still talk like in detail about that afternoon. I mean, it was so much fun and love the dogs, their personalities, you know, and our musher, she was great. And so she gets down and when we stopped to let the dogs rest, she gets down, she took some pictures of us in our cart, but then she just starts taking all of these, she just takes my camera and she just goes around to all of the dogs and she just starts randomly snapping pictures. And these dogs are so full of personality and joy. And we just got some of the best photos of these dogs.
I mean, it was quite wonderful.
It was so great. And then afterwards, when you come back into their pen area, you get to spend time with the team. You get to pet them and play around with them. And they're so gentle. And it was a great, totally worth just that experience alone, totally worth $189 per person. Our kids will never forget it. We will never forget it.
So the other big tour that happened while we were here, I and the kids did not go on. Abby and Jenny and Grant went on this, partially because the last boat tour that we had been on, first we did the whale tour in Mexico and the
people
kids
were still angry at
the
us
kids
about
were still
that.
Angry about that.
they
we
were
had
not
a
happy.
Really rough ferry ride in the Seattle area that the kids were a little frustrated with. So we decided not to put them through another boat ride.
Boats.
They didn't want to do
boats.
It. So I stayed behind.
And frankly,
with the kids,
we had work.
And I had work to do. And it also, it would have been very expensive for all five of us to go anyway.
Yes, you're about to see.
So, I think you got a good deal. I still don't think it was a ridiculous price. But for five people, you know, that's the problem with having three kids is everything costs more.
It costs more. And especially now that they're all older. None of them fall under the kid rate anymore, even our 10-year-old.
But a big part of this area is Kenai Fjords National Park. And we went to Exit Glacier, but that's really all we could see. Mm-hmm. Most of Kenai Fjords is the fjords which go out into the bay.
Yeah, you got to get on the water.
You went on a boat tour to go visit the bay.
I did. So Jenny Grant and I booked through Alaska Collection is the company that we went through. And we did the national park tour with Fox Island. This was an 8.5-hour boat tour. It was an all-day adventure. It's $250 per person, and that was including tax. Some of the things, though, that you get with this is you have the guided tour out on the boat with a narrator the whole time. You have lunch on the boat as well. And then towards the end of the day, they're going to stop at Fox Island, and you're going to have a dinner there on Fox Island. The dinner is nothing to write home about, pretty standard kind of buffet fare, but the island itself is beautiful. You get to spend a little bit of time there. They've got a gift shop. But here are some of the things that we experienced. This, like Jason said, this was worth all of the money that I spent to go on this. This was one of those days that I will never forget. It was really special for me to spend time with Jen and Grant. We have been friends since we were all in high school. To have this experience with them was so incredibly special. We went out, we saw puffins, seals, bald eagles. While on board, we also had cocktails. I got motion sickness. It was just a perfect time had by all. And one of the things, though, that happened that I will never forget. So, you know, you go out into Resurrection Bay, we're out in the fjords. It's a very cloudy, very kind of just dreary day, but it's almost perfect. I mean, it's spectacular out there. And we go out there and they're very good. They know all the spots. Okay. They do these tour guides in the boat. They do this for a living. They know where to go. So they take us out into the waters, open waters, and they know that the gray whales have been seen. The killer whales have been seen. So it's that time of year. Because again, if you remember when we started in Baja, all of these whales were down there to give birth in those warmer waters. And then they were going to start making their way back up the coast towards Alaska.
We traveled up with them.
So who knows? I could have seen the gray whale that I reached out and touched when I was in Baja. Who knows? So we're up there. And what they do is we get into this little area, and there's a few other tour boats out there as well. And we stop because they've all been sharing information and there's rumors that there is a group of gray whales. So we stop, she's talking, and they have an underwater microphone. And so they turn it on, we can start to hear them. And then these whales, what they do, it's called bubble net feeding, where they go down into the water and then they all kind of come together. And then they push up together collectively as a group. And while they're doing that, they're pushing fish up with them. And then they crest all of these whales at once with their mouths open. And they just start taking in all of this fish that they have brought to the surface. And it's called bubble net feeding. It is a collective community thing that these whales do. And they were doing that. And they move kind of around and about through this section of the open water, and they're moving around and you don't quite know exactly where they're going to land. They did a bubble net feeding right in front of the side of the boat, right in front of me. And I have never seen anything. That was like, take my money and take more of it, because that was incredible. And we happened, it just so random that we happened to be on that side of the boat. I happened to be filming. We had no idea that they were coming over there. And it is the most incredible footage I have ever captured.
That's probably a much better way to experience the whales than on a toy boat that the whales can push around.
I will have to say that not only was this about $220 more.
Yeah.
But this was my preferred way to interact with the whales.
$250 for this tour for a full day with two meals doesn't seem terrible.
No, it wasn't. Now, the cocktails are not included.
But like, didn't they do cocktails with like glacier ice, though?
Yes. So one of the things we also did, in including all of the wildlife that we saw, was that we went up alongside this stunning glacier. I just so gorgeous. And fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, it didn't break off at all, like really while we were there. But apparently that had just happened to a previous tour, like the day or so before a big chunk had come off. But what they do is at the beginning of this tour, if you want, you can say, I want to order a margarita made with glacier ice. You order that at the beginning, because then what they do is when you get over here, they go out into the water, like they scoop up pieces of the glacier that are just floating out in the water, and then they make your cocktail with that. Wow. And I didn't do it. I got a little motion sickness. I mean,
That's a long time to be on a boat.
Yeah. Well, you kind of really haul butt when you get going. And what I found, and what I have found for my motion sickness actually to be the most calming, and bless my friends, is to go to the very back of the boat. And I did this a lot. They had in the very back of this tour boat, they have just like a long bench, and you can just sit there and you can look out. And I spent a lot of my time just sitting back there.
We should say you are highly susceptible to motion sickness.
Yeah.
You get it pretty bad.
Yeah. I've done, the cruise. I had a couple of times on the cruise where not to the point of I'm not able to function, or I'm, sick in bed and stuck in my, cabin the whole time, or I wasn't able to enjoy this event. I know tricks for myself on how to manage it. I had taken some medication beforehand. I wear C-bands. And I knew that if I sat in the back of this boat and just, looked out, that I would be fairly good. And I was. And so we just kind of sat back there and enjoyed our time together, the three of us. But this is 8.5 hours. We left at 10 a.m. from Seward, and we were back at 6:30, well fed. And, it's first come, first serve with the seating inside too. So some seats are by windows and some seats are in the middle, like inside the actual boat. It's all, hit or miss with the weather. It's hit or miss with the wildlife. But just to be out there and to be out there in that national park, and just, I really appreciate, that the opportunity to do that, and that you and the kids were so supportive. I mean, the kids were literally like, bye. We ain't interested. Bye. But that you were just like, no, go do this with your friends. This is a really great opportunity for the three of you. And that was another really like lovely way to finish our time up at Seward. And then we loaded up, and it was time to start the journey home.
And it was quite the journey home. We did it so fast. I got a blood clot in my leg, but
we continued the tour of ERs after that. So
that one was at home.
That was our
welcoming gift as we, I went to the ER here when we finally arrived here, but this whole adventure, it was so wonderful. It wore us out, but it was just a wonderful experience, and I'm so happy that we did it. And this was, Seward was a great, great culmination of the entire trip.
Yeah. So thank you to all of you for following along with us, being with us as we have done this adventure. As you continue to patiently wait for the Baja to Alaska documentary to come out. But more than that, we just want to say thank you to Jamie and Clay and Grace and JoJo for going on this adventure with us, from the highs and the lows.
Something we haven't mentioned, Instinct, the mangy Chihuahua, but also Frankie. The Schumachers got a new dog. That's actually, they got it when we were in Homer, and we didn't mention it on last week's episode. They got
a new puppy,
the most adorable, rambunctious puppy. Frankie was their sort of take home gift from Alaska.
You know, quite the my kids were like, "Where's our take home gift?" And I was like, "Is not that here's some candy."
So that's they were spending gift. Most of their time in Seward, like dealing with, you know, is he going to be okay at home alone with Stink while that's we're gone and all that sort of
Stink
stuff.
Stink was not having it. Stink was like, "What are you? What is this? Yeah. What is this new black fluffy thing in my life?" But yeah, just thank you to you guys for coming along with us and liking us enough to spend all that time with us. I can't imagine having ever done that with anybody else. And it was just the adventure of a lifetime for sure. But this was it. It was time to head home after Seward and start a new chapter, not only for our family, but for RV Miles.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you know that eTrailer.com is focused on putting actual hands on the products they sell? That allows the representatives to see, touch, and know exactly what it is like to use the product they're providing you, with quality service and recommendations based on personal experience. If you're looking for a one-stop shop, eTrailer.com has you covered with a variety of RV items, including towing options, interior accessories, replacement parts, storage, and more. Have you ever wondered where you can find some of the odd parts for your RV online? eTrailer.com is where you do it. Visit rvmiles.com/eTrailer and receive free shipping on orders over $99. That's rvmiles.com/eTrailer.
RV Miles is sponsored by RVPostings.com, your go-to platform for buying and selling RVs. Explore a wide range of RVs, from small pop-up campers to large diesel pushers. Find the perfect fit for your travel needs. With their user-friendly interface, you can easily navigate through their website for a seamless RV shopping experience. You can get comprehensive information about each RV, including photos, features, details, and pricing, and connect with sellers directly. No middlemen. If you're selling your RV, you can list it on RVPostings.com and reach a targeted audience of RV buyers, ditching the tire kickers and the repetitive "is this still available" messages. It's a paid but affordable platform for sellers to post RVs for sale, so buyers can be sure that the seller is real and serious about selling. Whether you're buying or selling, RVPostings.com connects RV enthusiasts across the country. Get eyes on your RV with their Facebook buy and sell group with 163,000 members. All RVs posted on their website are posted to the group, as well as other sites like Oodle, Klaz, and American Listed. Whether you're buying or selling, start your journey at RVPostings.com.
Okay, Jay, it is time to check the level of our tanks. And as always, those levels are sponsored by our friends over at Liquefied RV Toilet Treatment, the no BS toilet treatment. You can find Liquefied over at liquefiedrv.com. Go over, check them out. Jay, what is in your black tank this week?
Those of you that follow me on Facebook already know this, but websites that don't have a place for you to log in, even though you already have a login. So for instance, went to our health insurance website yesterday. We're looking for new doctor stuff. So you go to their website. We have a policy through them, and the whole homepage of their website is about signing up for a plan and has no login page. You have to go to us, and there is not even a link on that page to log in. And I have encountered this so many times. QuickBooks is the same way.
Oh, QuickBooks is awful.
I don't understand why. So all of these websites, especially if you like just, you don't know, you don't like type in the whole website. You just like type QuickBooks into Google and click on the first link. It's invariably going to take you to a landing page meant to sell you the product instead of a place for you to log in to the product that you already pay for. And I don't understand why they can't put, I mean, plenty of other websites do it, put the login like up in the corner or something for you that already pay for the thing to log into.
You should take that up with the internet.
I will.
Yeah. Starting with Facebook.
The internet is listening to this. The internet scrapes the podcast episodes now. So the internet knows.
Take it up with Googs. They're learning. What can I say? All right. What is in your fresh tank?
So I've talked about this extensively on the news video that would have just came out before this episode. But the folks at Gen Y make the executive hitch. They make other hitches as well, but they make the executive fifth wheel hitch. And this is a fifth wheel hitch that's got sort of this rubber torsion thing in it that's supposed to be really good at smoothing out the ride and a great connection between the truck and the trailer that was supposed to protect the trailer, but also give you just a really quality ride with little bucking and chucking as possible. They have the standard kingpin type that you replace that whole pin box on the front of a fifth wheel. And then they have a gooseneck adapter type as well. So the Gen Y hitch comes standard on Brinkley RVs. Brinkley is sort of the new kid on the block. They make some luxury, mostly fifth wheels. They have travel trailers now as well. And they're very expensive and they're very nice, but they come standard with this upgraded Gen Y pin box. And what we have been hearing throughout this whole frame flex thing that's been going on throughout the RV industry, where people are concerned and have been reporting increased incidents of issues with their frames on their big, heavy fifth wheels, flexing out of spec and failing, either broken welds or broken bolts or misattached bolts or whatever. And one of the things that some of the manufacturers have been constantly blaming that on is people using pin boxes or hitches that are not approved. Right. So Brinkley, by the way, uses a standard Lippert frame. They use Lippert, who makes like 80% of the frames out there. They use a Lippert frame, but they have this upgraded pin box. So they did some testing with Gen Y. They went to a third party company that does testing of this kind of stuff. And they took a Brinkley trailer. I think it was Model G. Hooked up to a truck and really ran it through its paces. And what they said is normally when they go, the Brinkley owner said that normally when they go through this type of testing, the unit is just pretty much destroyed at the end of the testing. Like they work it really hard, but all the different hitches that they try, they went camping in this Brinkley after they ran it through this testing. The testing was so positive that they're like, we don't see another single thing you can buy out there that's a better upgrade to help improve the life of your RV than a hitch like this. We've in the past used the Anderson hitch on our Sabre fifth wheel. Anderson has a clause in their warranty that they'll pay for damage if the frame company says that the damage was caused by their hitch. Some, other companies like our friends over at Blue Ox have come out with their new fifth wheel kingpin adapter hitch, which is sort of kind of like the same style as the Anderson, but you don't have to have like an adapter on it. You actually use the kingpin. It goes right in it and it's steel and big and strong and stuff. And there are good products like that out there that actually can improve your towing. And for the industry to be pushing us towards this thing like that, we just have to use the pin box that came with the fifth wheel and can't improve it. And any improvements that we make, by the way, there's a law called the Moss-Magnuson Warranty Act that states that if you put aftermarket products like the Blue Ox hitch or the Gen Y hitch or whatever onto your RV, or this basically came out of the automotive industry, like, right? So if you had upgraded your car with aftermarket parts, then that manufacturer then says, oh, your entire warranty is invalid, right? They can't do that. That's against the law. The Moss-Magnuson Warranty Act made sure of that. They have to prove that the part that you used actually caused the damage. But you're going to have to fight them. Like you're going to go to court and all that sort of stuff. Are you going to spend that kind of money? right? And you might, if you're talking about your $150,000 fifth wheel, right, you might do that. But this is frustrating to me, but I think it's really cool that Brinkley did this testing with Gen Y to prove that at least the Gen Y pin box isn't doing any damage. And in fact, it's actually more gentle on the frame. And I think we would probably find that with a lot of these other connections as well.
Well, I think this just speaks to the narrative that we have talked about a lot. And that is that overall, the industry has to start working together, not against each other, but together, that all of the parts, including the consumer, have to start working in harmony. There has to be transparency. And you also have to understand that not everything is created equal. So not every RV is made this particular way. Not every RV, this post-COVID narrative, I'm over it. Like, we know so many people who can tell the same stories of what you're calling the post-COVID RV that had RVs from 2014, 2015, 2016. What's the excuse then? You know, this is just one of those things where we need to have more transparency. We need to be more open and we need to stop pointing fingers. Consumers need to stop pointing fingers, the long overdue finger. That's long overdue. The manufacturer needs to stop pointing fingers.
And we need to test more things. Let's test. The testing is great. You learn something.
Yeah.
And we improve the entire industry. We improve everything about it.
We only improve. Again, a rising tide will lift all boats. So, let's be more transparent with one another across all forms of the RV industry as consumers, as manufacturers, as products are being made. And let's invite everybody in to this conversation. And then we don't have to sit there and point fingers at one another when something goes wrong because we don't want to have to pay for it. Somebody is responsible for this. Somebody needs to step up and take care of it. And I guarantee you, it is not because somebody went and put a Gen Y, a Blue Ox, or an Anderson hitch on their RV. It's not happening.
Yeah.
Because if that was the case, those companies would have been out of business a long time ago.
Yeah.
So we need to discuss this realistically.
And these are very highly trusted companies, right? Hitch companies generally do a pretty good job because guess what? Their stuff doesn't work out. It is known and they're done.
I know people think that I'm too easy. I get this comment all the time that I'm too, came out wrong. Well, that I'm too easy on the industry. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case.
It's just, but more
I don't look at everything as a whole. I look at simple. One. Yeah. Exactly. It's just not that simple. Yeah. Yeah. It's not that simple. Just like anything else in life, it is nuanced and there are so many different levels and layers to everything. And I cannot hold one brand, style, type, whatever company. I cannot hold every other company responsible.
Yeah, there's,
like, it's just not.
There's a lot of companies that make good products out there. And there are a lot of companies that like, this part of their product is really good. Maybe this part of their product lags. And I think that's pretty much every company. Like, it's what's the mix of all the different things. They do this thing right and this thing wrong and this thing right and this thing right. It's not like this is good RV, this is bad RV, right?
No. It's not that simple. I wish it was, but like everything in this world, there is a whole gray area. Nothing is black and white.
All right. What is in your black tank this week?
So you alluded to this actually at the top of the show. We are going to get quite a show this summer. Some of us are, and not in a good way. So the cicadas are coming. The apocalypse is happening this summer.
I think a little earlier than summer. It could begin as soon as the end of May, of April.
Won't be leaving my house. So any time in the past that you've heard of a big cicada influx, we get cicadas every single year, right? But there are two types of broods out there. You have your 13-year brood and you have your 17-year brood. Now, those are large groups of cicadas. This year, those two broods are lining up and will come out at the same time. This is so like one of my worst nightmares. This has not happened. This 13, 17 year collection, this brood has not happened since Thomas Jefferson was president. That's how long it's taken to get them to sync back up again. Don't we live in such great times? Like, we get all the crap. Like, this is insane. So starting soonish, we are getting a 13 and a 17 year brood of cicadas. I cannot imagine what this is going to sound like in our neck of the woods.
They're loud here.
I mean, they're very loud.
I guess it's pretty much everywhere east of the Rockies that this can happen at. But
yeah,
but I particularly as it gets, it's sort of the more green woodland type places like where we are.
Yeah.
And heading east from here, I think.
Yeah, I think some of you will really have it bad. But this is, you know, just something to keep in mind this summer when you step outside and your watch goes off and says, warning, you are in a loud environment. And if you were to stay in this loud environment for 10 minutes, you could have ear damage. That's probably going to happen to some of us this summer, thanks to the 13 and 17 year brood of cicadas that have been like, you know, I mean, it's been a minute. Last time we were all together, Jefferson was president. We should look it together again. We miss you. So, yeah, here we go.
They're going to leave. Their shells are going to leave.
Oh, God. It's so gross. I can't handle it.
What's in your fresh tank?
So my fresh tank is last night, Friday night, we went to the indoor football leagues here in the Quad Cities. We have our own IFL team. It is called the Quad City Steamwheelers. And last night we went down to the arena and we saw some indoor football. So there's two levels of indoor football, which I just learned about. There's the AFL, which is the Arena Football League. And then there's one below, which is the IFL, which is what the Steamwheelers are, which would probably account for why the snaps were so atrocious last night.
Bad snaps.
Whoa, whoa, but we won. But we won. We won in overtime. What was so fun about this was not only was this a really affordable way for our family to go and enjoy some live sports. In fact, I think our entire, all five of us, the cost was basically the same cost for us to go to an NFL game for one ticket and sit up in the nosebleeds.
Less than that.
I mean, you know, are we going and seeing like, you know, a Patrick Mahomes or the tickets
were $27 a piece. So, I'd say it was half of what it cost to go to an NFL game for one person.
But this is just like a friendly reminder that as you travel out this summer, that there are a lot of minor league sports that are happening. You know, our Double A, I believe, baseball team here in the Quad Cities, the River City Bandits.
Nope. Quad City River Bandits. We are not River City.
Sorry, that Harold Hill and me wants us to be River City. The Quad City River Bandits. This is the problem with the Quad Cities. I never know if it's Quad Cities, Quad City, if we're going to talk about the river, or if we're going to talk about trains, the Steamwheelers, the River Bandits. I never know. It's literally everyone's like, you want to name a business. You can name it. It has to either have city or cities, and it either has to have something to do with the river or the trains. And then we all have to sound alike, and then we have to confuse everybody. So the Quad City River Bandits are opening up their season very, very soon.
Yeah.
And the minor league baseball park here in the Quad Cities was actually voted the best minor league baseball park in the country.
It's a pretty cool one.
It's beautiful.
And now they've done a lot of stuff. It's a lot of fun. There's like a little kiddie roller coaster there and a big Ferris wheel and stuff. And it's
right on the Mississippi.
Right on the river. Beautiful location under the Centennial Bridge. But we've talked many times, we did it in Alaska, about a lot of the minor league sports that we've gone to over the years in our travels.
The Durham Bulls. We loved the game at the Durham Bulls. That was so much fun.
It's for a small fraction of the price of going to pro sports. It is almost more fun.
I got to tell you, so the fans, so the thing about, to go back to arena football, is you know, we were only like four rows from the field.
That's when you compare it to the NFL too. Like, we were in seats that would have cost like $3,000 a ticket for an NFL game.
Right. We could hear the QB's calls. Like, and you know, But what's so great about this is, A, whoa, people really love their steamwheelers here in the Quad Cities. Yikes. But also the players are so interactive with the crowd, with the fans. And as the game goes on and it starts getting more intense, they really feed off the energy from the fans. And there's a lot of interaction with that. And there's a lot of young people that come to this, a lot of young kids, and they're really great about, you know, coming through and like high-fiving them if there's an opportunity to do that. And we had a blast. We won in overtime. And then they invite everybody to come down to the field, and there's about a half an hour autograph session. Some of the players come out, and the amount of people that come down there and wait for these players to get their autographs and take pictures with them.
It's like hang out more. It's for the kids to just be on the field is a lot of fun.
Oh, it's like our kids, we brought our football and our kids were down there just kind of tossing the ball around and walking around down on the field. And this is all free. This is all included with the price of the ticket. The players hang out down there. They are so nice. I mean, it's just such a great time. And we had a guy in front of us who was very, very animated, like a very animated guy. And we couldn't quite figure him out to begin with because it was really intense.
His son scored a touchdown.
And then the son, like, he plays on the steamwheelers, and this dad, he scores this touchdown, and then he comes over and he gives his dad the ball. Yeah, and everyone around this guy, like at the end of the night, several people came up and like high-fived him or shook his hand and was like, you know, he was a little intense. He had a few minutes where he was a little intense with some other people in and around him. But he redeemed himself towards the end.
And we had the same experience last time we went to a game where like just people watching.
Oh, people watching is the best.
Especially the really hardcore fans and watching. But again, there's so many opportunities to do this across the country, and it's a great way to learn the community that you're in. There's also, of course, a whole host of college sports across the nation, or even high school that you could go visit.
I mean, obviously, we're not going to an Iowa basketball game anytime soon. As much as we'd love to go see Caitlin Clark play, and it's only like 45 minutes from us.
That's NFL tickets.
That's at a level that ain't happening for us. So, you know, but this was a great way to enjoy some time, again, getting to know our community here and go out and enjoy football. And our whole family liked it. And even our 16-year-old, who's not really into football.
Yeah.
He loves going because the energy there is just so great. So this is just a friendly reminder as you head out on your own adventures. If you would, you know, find yourself able to participate in some local sports, live sports, take that opportunity. You'll have such a great time and you'll kind of be hooked on it a little bit where you'll want to continue to do it as you travel around.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this week's episode of the RV Miles podcast.
Yes, it is. Thank you all so much for joining us again for another episode. It is so fantastic to have you all here. We cannot believe the Baja to Alaska is over. What are we going to talk about now?
We got a lot. We got
Show's
a lot
over.
Coming.
Sorry. Podcast is done. I'm just going to close doors. We have nothing more to talk about. We're over. But if you would like to connect with Jason and I, if you want to talk about this episode, we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on the things that we discussed today. Just come on over and find us in the RV Miles Facebook group. You can leave us a comment there. We would happily talk to you about anything that's on your mind. And of course, if you haven't gone and left a review for RV Miles, we would certainly love it if you would head over to Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review and maybe a little note as well. It would be great to see maybe something that you like about the show that you want to share with others. Otherwise, until next week, please stay safe. Please continue to stay healthy. The cicadas are coming, everyone. Prepare yourselves and keep logging those RV miles.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.